Hello, and welcome to The Intersection, the intersection of politics and culture. My name is Mark Riley. We're so glad you're with us for this episode of our podcast. It's back and just in time. What do I mean by that? We're back just in time for yet another Democratic presidential debate, the last one before the Iowa caucuses. This time, it's the last six standing, including no people of color. Cory Booker dropped out, so there's no black candidate in the race for the Democratic nomination. Julian Castro also dropped out, one of the Latinos who was running. So there are no people of color in the last six standing. I didn't watch it, so maybe it's not fair to critique something that I have not seen myself. All I know is that time is getting short, and at least the citizens of Iowa will be making up their minds soon. That is a good thing, because I think most people are a little bit bored with the debates. I think they're getting to the point where they're I think they're getting bored to the point that they're getting with the impeachment saga. One thing after another thing after another thing. And of course, the media treats certainly the debates as a horse race. But what is interesting to me as a black American is the recent polling that's been done by Ipsos. Ipsos surveyed the attitudes of likely black voters about the current crop of candidates. It shows Joe Biden with a commanding lead of the field, including 28 points over second place Bernie Sanders. Biden came in at 48, Bernie Sanders came in at 20. That should surprise no one. Certainly didn't surprise me. The most interesting dive, however, is the generational dive, one that I saw myself with my own two eyes 4 years ago. Younger blacks tend to, and when I say tend to, doesn't mean it's unanimous, but certainly younger black people, younger black voters, have a tendency to support Bernie Sanders over Joe Biden. This is not me just making it up. Ipsos obviously has polling that says that, and among younger black voters, voters under 35, Bernie Sanders has a 12-point lead over Joe Biden, which I find fascinating. Now, older blacks, blacks over 35, and by the way, blacks over 35 tend to vote in higher numbers than blacks under 35, but older black folks have a tendency to support Joe Biden. Now, there are any number of different reasons why this is in fact the case. But I found out myself, up close and personal, 4 years ago, how this divide existed even then, when Hillary Clinton was the nominee of the Democratic Party. I'm not talking about before the nominating process had been completed. I'm talking about in September of 2016. When everybody thought Hillary Clinton was going to be cruising to the presidency. And we all know how that turned out. Now, I was canvassing for Hillary Clinton as part of my work on the streets of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Key city, key state, as it turned out. This was, again, September and October of 2016, in the run-up to the actual general election. Time after time after time, when I spoke to older people in West Philly, their enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton was abject and undeniable. They were enthusiastic. We didn't even have to say anything as we canvassed to older black people in residential neighborhoods of Philadelphia where those older black folks had been established for some time. They were all in with Hillary. However, when I canvassed in areas closer to Center City, Philadelphia, in gentrifying neighborhoods, and talked with younger black people, I found far less enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton's candidacy. Many of these people were Bernie people, and they were not convinced to come out for Hillary, even though Bernie Sanders had urged his people to do so. Talking again, and this is anecdotal, but talking time and time and time again to younger black folks, in some cases black folks that were in fact renovating buildings close to Center City, Philadelphia. And they would say, I just don't trust Hillary Clinton. You ask them why, they weren't really clear about why, but the fact of the matter is, they simply did not trust her. Now, you can infer a great deal from this, or you can infer nothing from this. At the time, I thought to myself, well, they may not trust Hillary, they may not like Hillary, but if they have to make a choice between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they will come out and vote. The fact of the matter is, many of them, and this is not limited to younger black people, younger white people too, stayed home. And I'm going to tell you something, because in the years since 2016, there have been a number of Democrats, black and white, who will say to those Bernie supporters who stayed home, yeah, well, look at what you did. It's your fault that we now have Donald Trump. And you know what? Bernie supporters don't want to hear it. They don't care what mainstream Democrats have to say about their participation or lack of saying. If you are going to recapture the White House from Donald Trump, which is supposedly the Democrats' aim, you're going to have to find a way to get people. And this is an interesting divide here. You're going to have to find a way to get people on the one hand who support Bernie Sanders, and if Bernie Sanders does not get the nomination, you have to get those people out. You have got to convince them that Joe Biden, assuming it's Biden that wins the nomination, you're going to have to convince them that Biden is someone they can trust, that Biden is someone who can in fact beat Donald Trump with their help. Recriminations will not work, period, end. Now, the flip side of that, and this is something I'm not sure a lot of people have actually thought about, what happens if Bernie wins? Will Biden's wide support in the black community, will they come out for Bernie? Will older black people turn out for Bernie Sanders, where right now he doesn't have a great deal of support? And by the way, the other candidates, the Elizabeth Warrens, the Pete Buttigiegs, and others, have flagging black support. So it's not just about Bernie versus Biden. Anybody who captures the Democratic nomination is going to have enthusiastic voter turnout among all ages of black people. Black folks are a crucial component of the Democratic Party and certainly the Democratic base. We've heard for the last 4 years how crucial Donald Trump's base is to him. Well, black America is crucial to anybody. I don't care who it is that's running. And keep in mind, the same Ipsos poll gives Pete Buttigieg 2% support among African Americans. Whoever it is, they're going to have to galvanize and mobilize black America. We'll see whether or not they can do so. But the recriminations that I've heard, again, anecdotal, but recriminations that I've heard from people who say, well, look, Bernie supporters, they took their basketball and they took it off the court, and look what happened. Bernie supporters had some legitimate beefs about the way the party conducted itself in 2016. Not worth going over now. Maybe the party is a little better than it was in 2016. Maybe. But if Bernie supporters thinks he got jobbed again, forget about it. They're not going to come out again. I'd love to hear from people about this. I'm really curious to find out what you think about Black America's generational divide. And by the way, there was a story about this some time ago where younger black people were trying to convince their parents and their grandparents in some cases to abandon Joe Biden and get on the Bernie bandwagon or to look at more progressive candidates generally. And there was a question as to whether or not that had had any kind of desired effect. So we'll see. I would love to find out your opinions on this, because I think it's going to become more and more crucial. Now, the margin of error for the polling that I've just been discussing by Ipsos was 4 percentage points. And I think that that's, a margin of error. But when there's a 20-point lead or a 28-point lead, even if the margin of error is 4% against Biden, it's still 24%. So, I mean, you're talking about some very serious things that have to be ironed out here. And I got to be honest, I'd love to hear from you at my Facebook page. That's Mark Riley Media. Or whether you agree with me or disagree with me about any of this, let us have that conversation. Post your comments on my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. Stay with us. Welcome back to this episode of The Intersection. And now to talk of Harry and Meghan, or more formally, the Duke and Duchess of Suffolk. Having spent the better part of the last month in the UK, I have not been able to escape the relentless coverage of these two and their decision to step away from their duties as royals and lead an independent life. Now, as an American, and I think a lot of Americans would ask themselves, well, what exactly are their duties as royals? Don't ask me, because I haven't been able to figure that out just yet, since Harry is apparently sixth in line to the British throne. But the fury of some in media is as if Donald Trump decided to walk away from the duties of the American presidency while retaining most of its trappings. And in Britain, the trappings include serious amounts of money, even though Harry and Meghan, and I'm not using their formal titles here, even though the two of them have said that they want to step away and become financially independent. One British media personality, who shall remain nameless, went so far as to say he was ready to step into Harry's shoes, like he could. Of course, Americans have little or no time for most things royal. Americans seem somewhat perplexed, and I'm not talking about myself necessarily, but there are Americans who are absolutely perplexed by the entire concept of royalty. Our interest as Americans lies mainly in the fact that Meghan Markle is an American, born in Los Angeles, and therefore, whether the British like it or not, she's one of us. British media coverage of this story is utterly fascinating to me. TV networks here, at least one of them, has gone so far as to do an entire special on Harry and Meghan. And I guess it's one of those gifts that keep on giving, sort of like Donald Trump to the American media. They can go on and on and on and speculate and speculate. Earlier in the week, they had a meeting with the Queen. Actually, they didn't. Harry did. Had a meeting with the Queen and the senior royals at Sandringham. And they supposedly worked out some kind of timeline where everyone, at least at this point, seems to be relatively happy. But, I mean, one of the things that Americans don't understand, and which I've come to understand being here for a little bit period of time, is that for people in the United States, there are a few things that need to be understood about UK tabloid media coverage. Imagine, if you will, supermarket tabloids in the United States, like the National Enquirer, having clout similar to that of the New York Times. British tabloids have a great deal more influence on public thinking and opinion in Britain than their American counterparts do in America. In fact, Prince Harry and Meghan are suing at least a couple of these tabloids for negative articles they printed about them. The British also misunderstand the American view of the monarchy. This was driven home to me by at least one British commentator saying that Americans view the Kennedys as aristocracy. Americans have never seen the Kennedys as aristocracy or royalty. In fact, many Americans just don't see the point of all this. But one thing that has actually come to become a very important part of this entire discussion has been Meghan Markle's race. She is mixed race, if you want to use that term. I don't like to use it, but that is, I guess, the most accurate way to determine what her origins are. And there are questions about whether or not some of the tabloids have been racist in their coverage of Meghan Markle. Now, there are some British media people who reject instantly, and these are not just tabloid reporters, they reject instantly the notion that any of their colleagues have dealt with Meghan Markle in a racist fashion. Racist? How dare you say that it's been racist? Fact of the matter is, from the perspective of a black American, I won't say all of it, I won't say most of it, but a good deal of it has been. And there are people, certainly here in the UK, that know better, all right? Black Britishers understand very clearly what was done to Meghan Markle and why she was so ready. And in some cases, I guess, according to some people in the media, pushed Harry into the decision to withdraw from royal duties because she was under a relentless spotlight. Now, this is not a woman who shied away prior to her marriage to Harry. She didn't shy away from the spotlight. She was on television in the United States, for goodness sake. You know, and some people make a big, well, she was only a B-list person and nobody in England knew who she was. Of course not. People in England wouldn't know who Meghan Markle was. She was in a series called Suits. I'm not even sure it aired here in the UK. That's not the point. The point of the matter is she had a life before she married the Duke of Sussex. And the fact of the matter is that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle made a decision which I, as far as I can tell, was a mutual decision. I don't know who pushed who into what. I've heard both sides. I've heard it was Harry's idea. I've heard it was Meghan's idea. To me, it doesn't really matter. They have decided, certainly from the British perspective, to take a radical position, but that's not the end of the world. At least, as far as I can tell, it's not the end of the world. And I understand if Meghan Markle was sensitive, and especially after having a child, sensitive to the notion that there were people who were going to try and racialize her existence as the Duchess of Sussex, that she might want to say, hey, you know what, later for this. I don't want to be bothered with this. Now, one of the things that has kind of left me a little perplexed is the whole question. People keep saying, at least in the British media, well, they're abdicating their responsibilities. Well, what exactly is it that they do? Remember, this is a guy who's sixth in line to the British throne. I'm sure he does have some royal duties, but nobody seems to talk about exactly what they are. You know, I don't want to be cavalier about this, but it's almost as if you're talking about ribbon cuttings at supermarkets. And I know it's more than that. And forgive me, whoever may be listening in the UK, I know it's more than that. But when people talk about royal duties and responsibilities, I'm not quite sure what they're talking about. And in the British press, they say duties and responsibilities without really going into any detail whatsoever about what they are. So what do we have here? we have a couple who have decided to step back from these royal duties and lead a different type of life, and are in some cases being made in the media to choose, well, is he going to stay? Are they going to stay in the UK or Canada? Like Canada's not part of the Commonwealth. Like they shouldn't have some freedom of movement between the UK and Canada if that is what they choose. I understand having respect for royalty. Lord knows I have respect for royalty. But if this is their choice, and if this is how they choose to live their lives and raise their child, whether or not they are called HRH is of no consequence, at least not to me. I'm an American, so maybe it makes a big difference to people in the UK. But I have to say, it does not make, I don't think, one bit of difference to people living in the United States. It's like, well, let them live their lives. Let them go ahead and do, for better or for worse, since that's what they got married for, let them work it out. They're not kids. It's not like Harry's 21 and Meghan's 22. They're adults. They're grown. Let them live their lives along the lines of their level of comfort. Not the British media's perception of their level of comfort, or the British media's level of its own comfort. See, because what I see, and this is a common thread between American and British media, if you say something negative about the media, it will come back to haunt. The media will come at you hard and heavy, whether it be tabloid media in the UK or whether it be the New York Times in the States. They will come at you. And especially they will come at you if it makes them money. And I have to figure there is no British tabloid in the United Kingdom that is losing money covering Harry and Meghan. I'm figuring they're making bank, just like the New York Times makes bank covering Donald Trump. It may be negative, but what the hell? The check's still clear. And that's the important part. Thank you so much for listening to our broadcast. The executive producer of The Intersection is Ms. Kim Jack Riley. Till we meet again, please be well. Do you remember?